Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. It's the most unique website for small businesses on the planet, maybe in the galaxy. And I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance and use it to your advantage, help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Lots of good stuff there. And it's all free except my books. We do ask you to pay for those, which we'll be glad to let you do. And you can do it right there on our website at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And boy, howdy, folks, we couldn't do without her. She's our good friend. Joan, welcome back.
The galaxy?
In the galaxy, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
That's
glad
my
to know that you're very humble.
Prove me wrong. Hey, listen,
ooh,
that's an easy
that
one.
That would be tough.
That's an easy one, Joan. I mean, I can say things like that all day long. Prove me wrong.
Yeah. I see your point now.
You know me. I'm never at a loss for hyperbole, Joan. How are things?
Well, things are okay here. You know, the cherry blossoms are all gone, and it's a very nice spring here, and we're in our usual mid-spring gridlock, and we're coming up on another fake deadline. We just had a fake deadline. Now we have a new one.
Tell us about that.
Well, every time the Congress has so much trouble doing anything anymore that they have to create deadlines for themselves by saying, we're going to pass this or that bill by the next time we go out for our next recess.
And do you think that they don't realize, Joan, that it's basically highlighting to us in big bold letters that they're not doing their job?
Well, and if the leadership had real, how shall I put this delicately, guts, they would use those deadlines and say, if we don't get this passed, you're not going on your recess. We'll work all through the recess, and that would really knock some heads together and get some things done.
Now, Joan, you're asking too much to
I'm being
talk
a little
about
naive,
Republicans.
I know, I'm sorry.
To talk about Republicans and guts in the same
or Democrats. Yes.
But in any case, no, I disagree with you, Joan. You know, who was the first to tell you, who was the first person you heard say that the Democrats don't know how to be in the minority and the Republicans haven't learned how to be in the majority?
That does sound familiar.
Yeah,
let me think
yeah.
about that.
How long
for
have
minute.
I been? I've been saying that since 1997.
Yeah,
I think.
That's right. That's right.
And it's the truth. No, you're exactly right. The Republicans have no guts. They're wobbly.
Well, it's true, but they have a new fake deadline coming up,
okay.
The Memorial Day recess.
I love your term, fake deadline.
Well, it's true. So they'll try to get things done before then, and then they'll have their 4th of July recess deadline. And then the real big one, which is actually semi-real, is the so-called August recess, where they're gone for an entire month. Usually there's a lot of scrambling that goes on toward the end of July to get certain things passed, because then when they come back in September, they've got really the final sprint. And in this year, this being an election year, they are going to be out, no question about it, by the end of October.
Well, here's what we do. If they came down and said, okay, Blasingame, you get to make one decision that will stick. You can use it however you want to use it. It'll impact the it'll impact the way the government works, and it will stick. Whatever you say, that's what we have to do from now on.
Okay.
Guess what I would do? I wouldn't change anything except one thing. I would say, okay, guys, we're going to decide when you get paid.
Ooh.
And so, we're gonna take a little poll. And so, when you know, you guys are so fond of polls. And so, whenever you miss a deadline, we're gonna take a little poll. Should we pay these guys for not doing their job? What do you think, guys? What do you think, America? What do you think we should do? And let them wonder about how the polls are gonna come in on whether they get paid or not. What do you think about that?
Ooh,
Joan?
I like that.
Yeah. See, that's my that would be my one edict. If I were able to make one edict, that's what I would do.
Right. Not bad.
And it would be for Republicans, for Democrats, and I think that they might find a little bit of a way to make it to work with each other if they thought they weren't going to get paid. Because you know what? I know they like to get paid.
Well, like I say, you got to knock some heads together. Maybe that's right. The way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and they're obviously not capable of doing it themselves. And of course, I'm going to come back to the other thing that I've learned, and I've learned this, Joan, in the last 5 or 6 years now. I didn't know it before, but the party, the big spending party, is now official. We know who it is. It's the party that's in power.
That's true.
Whatever
that's
leadership true. Party is, that's the big spending party.
Yep.
And it's very sad. Joan, let's move over and talk about something that you guys brought up this week in the Kiplinger letter, and that's some of the tougher decisions that investors are having to make right now. There, what is in the way of where are we stuck? What are investors so flummoxed about right now, Joan?
Well, we've got slower growth in the economy and profits, but we also have an increase in interest rates. So it's kind of hard to figure out where to go from here. We're saying that, in our usual turn of phrase, eye-popping returns are not something that we can look forward to in the stock market.
If you want to hear exciting language, folks, you got to come to Kiplinger's letter to get that.
I know.
But you know, Joan, let's do what we've done in the past. Let's make sure we put this slower economy comment into perspective.
Yes. Notice I didn't say slow economy.
Right. Japan and old Europe would give you their pinky fingers to have our economy.
Well, the Europeans must love you calling them old Europe. They must.
Well,
you did that on purpose.
I have to be honest, John, in the interest of full disclosure and to give attribution where it's due. Secretary Rumsfeld was the one who coined that term, not me.
Oh, yes, and he got a lot of trouble for that.
He did, and I liked him for that too, by the way. His stock went up, in my opinion, when he did that. But I think it's a good designation. And but regardless, you know, we're still looking at, you guys are predicting 3%.
Yeah, and I've always said I'll take that. That's fine with me.
Slower meaning not 4%, and
right.
which means, you know, if you gear your car down from 200 to 150, you're still going pretty fast.
And no question about it.
Right. So
right.
Yeah, that's just, yeah. Oh well, the car slowed down. Sure it did. But it's still running pretty darn fast. But you mentioned interest rates. Now, that's a real concern for a lot of folks, isn't it?
Right, and I think Mr. Bernanke is due to testify up on the Hill pretty soon, and people are waiting with bated breath to see if he's going to give a hint about stopping the interest rate increases.
Right.
But I think we're going to be disappointed that we're not going to get that hint, I don't think.
Well, I think this is one place, one area that Kiplinger and Blasingame are pretty much in sync, and that is on what we think interest rates are going to be. We both predicted they'd go to 5%, but some people are now saying 5.25%. Who knows? We'll find out before too long, though, I'm afraid. It's 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. We've got a lot more to come. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Joan Pride. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about investors' concerns right now. Of course, their concerns are the concerns of the businesses they invest in.
Right.
And with petroleum, the good news, Joan, is...
Give me some, please.
The good news is, as we've said before, and as our economists have taught us on the show over the years, is that the reason the economy isn't tanked right now over $70 a barrel petroleum, crude oil, is because we use much less petroleum per dollar of GDP than ever before. That's the good news.
I don't think people realize that because there's so much media hype about SUVs and things like that.
But you look around you. I mean, if I had said to you, if you had said to me 4 years ago that we would have $70 a barrel petroleum, crude oil in 2006, I would have said, well, then, you know, what are we, you know, are we in a recession on the way to a depression or already in the depression? You know what?
Right.
You and I both would have said that.
Oh, sure.
But that's before, as I say, our economists put it in perspective for us. Mm-hmm. Bill Dunkelberg and Richard DeKayser and other members of our economist troop here at the Brain Trust have taught us those things, and it makes a lot of sense. And it's the reason why, even though petroleum has gone up like it has, look around you and the economy is still ginning right along. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is, because our economy is growing, mm-hmm. we still use a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It still is the oxygen of the marketplace. I like to think of it this way, Joan. When you and I are out of shape, we take a lot of breaths when we exercise, right?
Oh,
but if we
yeah.
get into shape, if we get into shape, we're more efficient with our oxygen.
Okay.
Our economy is a lot more in shape. And we still have to have oxygen, but we don't have to, but we don't use this. We use it a lot more efficiently now, but we still have to have a lot of it. And it is the oxygen of the marketplace.
I had not thought of it that way.
Well, I have that kind of mind, Joan.
Well, it's a good thing I talked to you.
You only get that right here on the Small Business Advocate Show.
Wow.
But but anyway, the thing is that it is expensive, and they're talking about it going higher now, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm not really sure where this is going to end up.
Yeah, and also...
Although, if you look at our energy forecast, we say it's going to eventually come down.
Yeah.
By the end of the year.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Yeah.
And imagine, Joan, what this economy would be doing if... I mean, wouldn't you agree that if petroleum... If crude oil were at $45 to $50 a barrel, our economy would be busting at the seams.
Wow. Maybe that's good it's not, though.
It may be. Who
you
knows?
You don't necessarily want it to be doing that.
Maybe there is a cosmic plan out there somewhere, Joan. What about gold? Now, Joan, you're our gold expert.
Oh, right? No. Sure.
Gold is, what, over $600 an ounce?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
How about that? What does that mean?
Well, I don't know how much it means because we're saying that this run-up is going to lose momentum in the next few months.
Yeah.
And we've never really been big on telling people to put your money in precious metals or commodities just because they're very volatile.
Very volatile.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially other commodities. I don't know how volatile gold is, but I know other commodities are for sure. Joan,
sure.
One of the things that you guys point out is that there may be opportunities abroad. And for some time now, one of our investment experts, Gary Moore, who is a disciple of Sir John Templeton, who literally made his fortune and made a lot of other people rich by investing abroad, both of those guys have been talking about and putting their money where their mouth is in stocks outside the country, outside the United States.
Right. That's interesting. Well, we do say that there are opportunities abroad because of the upturn in the economies in Japan and Europe.
Yep. Yep. Well, and there are lots of other stock markets out there that where the marketplace is stable. And, there are opportunities over there. And I have to say, John, I mean, I'm not an expert in these things. I just, but it does make sense to me that I'm not an investment expert, period, but certainly not in terms of foreign investments. But it makes a lot of sense, especially, Joan, when we realize the sophistication of these other countries, the level of the way their economies are becoming more sophisticated, and they're becoming part of the global marketplace.
That's right.
And they're trading. They're becoming our trading partners. And,
that's right.
And more and more of these countries, Joan, have trade agreements with each other. We're not a party to as many of them as we should be, but they have trading agreements with each other. And Joan, I just think that when countries are building trading alliances, they can't spend as much time building weapons.
Oh, okay. Well, you've always said that.
Yep, I have. And so I think that's a good thing. And Joan, when I step back, I just really have there's some things that I'm a little bit negative about what's going on in the world these days, but when I step back and look at the trading that's going on among countries, I just think that long term that's got to be a good thing.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
Oh, no question about it. Sure.
Yeah. All right, we got to take a quick break in just a few seconds. When we come back, folks, we're going to move over and talk about a little bit about regulations. Then we're going to talk about whether Americans are saving enough money or not. I've got some warped ideas about that, as you won't be surprised to know. And we're going to talk a little bit about your electricity bills. And then we're going to talk about the Democrats and the Republicans and whether they're going to pick up any, which one's going to pick up seats in the next election cycle. 29 after. Stay with us. Stand by me.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with us. Thanks for staying with us. If you've been listening already, that means you're a highly intelligent individual. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, you know, when we went to the break, I gave the audience a little bit of an idea about what was coming up. But I intentionally left out one little part because I was afraid if I told them what we were going to talk about, they'd leave.
Uh-oh.
The EEOC.
Now why do you think they would leave?
Because I don't even want to talk about it. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, right?
Hey, I thought small business owners were brave people.
But the EEOC is not our friend. They're more our problem than our friend.
Well, I think you all should consider yourselves lucky. I think it's been kind of quiet during the Bush administration.
Well, thank God.
But what we're saying is it may be quiet no more.
Right. Yeah, exactly. This is why I'm bringing it up, folks, because forewarned is forearmed. Joan, what's the news?
Well, we're actually saying that we, as you point out, we say the EEOC has been foundering for several years, but now it's kind of pulling itself back together. And its goal now is to sniff out systemic discrimination problems at companies. And apparently they're going to give their staffers bonuses for cracking big cases. That mm-hmm. kind of seemed interesting. So, but employers are concerned because that
sounds
may make
predatory
them a little,
to me, Joan.
A little overzealous, maybe.
Sounds predatory to me.
Yeah,
Joan. My favorite EEOC story is one that I heard a few years ago, and I'm going to do my best to tell the story. I don't remember all the minute details, but there was a guy who opened up a lamp company in a really depressed neighborhood of Chicago, the Chicago area. And I mean, these people had no jobs and no hope, the people who lived there. It was really a bad neighborhood, frankly.
Okay.
He opened up a little plant there to make lamps. And so people came.
So in other words, he was doing a really good thing here.
A wonderfully good thing, and he was making a product. And these people just came from the neighborhood and went to work for him. He gave them jobs. He gave them you know opportunity and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And was helping to revitalize that community. The EEOC came in, and because he didn't have you know just the right mix of people or something, they came down on him.
Oh no.
Yeah. That's a real story that happened. It's been several years that I remember that story. But those are the kinds of things that I think of when I think of the EEOC. My point is that you know they've got their rules, by golly, and we don't care what else you've done.
Yeah.
And so some people lost their jobs. I mean, the guy closed up.
That's kind of counterproductive, isn't it?
That's exactly my point. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Joan. That's exactly right. And so I'm sure I'll get a visit from those guys any minute now. But
they're
knocking at
this.
The door. They're knocking at the door, Joan, even as they found me already.
Bye, Jim.
They found me already. Well, but so, folks, Joan has given you the warning. They're mm-hmm. apparently they're becoming a little more ardent in their efforts. And so, you know, forewarned is forearmed. Joan, you hear a lot today. I'm reading this right off the letter, folks. You hear a lot these days about Americans not saving enough money. What's the story?
And it's true. In fact, I think we're into negative territory. I wish your listeners could see this nifty little graphic. Things don't look good here. We're saying that the government says that the savings rate was a negative 0.4
yep.
last year. That's the worst since the Great Depression. That's pretty bad.
Can I put this in perspective, Joan?
Please do.
They're comparing us to people all over the world.
Okay.
Who are great? Who are apparently a lot better savers. But, Joan, most of those people don't have 401ks. They don't have individual retirement programs, individual retirement accounts, IRAs.
Right.
They don't have health savings accounts, HSAs, which are IRAs for health care. They don't own, most of them don't, and I say, and I'm being very general, I admit this, folks, okay. But around the world, most people don't own their homes. Right?
So, right.
Would you agree with that?
I think so.
In making a big, broad statement, it's pretty close to being true.
Mm-hmm.
Americans have IRAs and HSAs and 401ks. We own our homes. We do other things with our money. Those are investments. We're not saving money as much as we should because over the last 30 years, we've done a pretty darn good job of building capital markets and ownership opportunities. And you know what else, Joan? Another reason why Americans aren't saving their money?
What?
They're investing it in their small businesses.
Well, that's true.
So I really get irritated with people saying that Americans ought to save more money. I don't want them to save more money. I want them to invest more money. That's what our economy is built on. And that's what I think about that. 22. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend, Joan Pryde, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan and her organization have an outstanding website, joanpryde.com. Right, Joan?
You bet.
No, it's kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. And that's where you can go to find a lot of good stuff. I encourage you to check it out. They've got a free site, but also they got stuff back in behind the free part that you can subscribe to, and they've got publications like the letter that Joan and I work off of that's coming up on his 83rd birthday in September, and that comes out every week by email or by print by hard copy. And then they've got three biweekly letters, Joan, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And I think you guys need to do a small business letter.
That sounds good to me.
Can I recommend that?
Sure.
So I expect you to take care of that over the next 30 days, Joan.
Okay.
Work that into your schedule and put out a brand new letter, the small business letter.
In my free time, sure.
And my tongue is only somewhat in my cheek, Joan. And then they have the monthly magazine, which you can see on newsstands, or you can subscribe to it at their website, kiplinger.com. They got a 30-day free trial that I worked hard to get them to. Well, I didn't have to work too hard. They were glad to do it. And then they've got the phone number. Joan, what is that?
Yes, our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
I like telling people, because it's good information, folks, and I hope you'll use them to your advantage. Joan, I gotta give Kiplinger your due on the savings thing. Tell us about the second paragraph.
Okay, well,
and tell me that doesn't fit perfectly with what I just said.
And you were our source for this, right?
I hope so.
Well, we started off, of course, in this little segment by talking about how low the savings rate is, and it's gone actually to a negative point, and then you got on your soapbox. But as it turns out, we talk about the good news in the second paragraph where we say personal wealth is increasing. And people are accumulating wealth in their homes, which it doesn't really count toward the savings rate, or as you point out, in retirement savings accounts. So they may be spending more, but they do have a certain amount of assets that they can call wealth, if not
mm-hmm.
savings.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joan, I think Americans probably don't appreciate the marketplace that we have. We have the most well-developed capital market on the planet, probably in the galaxy. We have this whole, and that includes the opportunity for home ownership. And you know, Joan, earlier in the week we had Rick Pinion on, who's our financial planning expert in the Brain Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I were just sort of running through all the different retirement instruments that have been developed in the last 30 years. Starting with the IRA and now, I mean, there's so many, Joan.
The 401k.
I covered them. And now they've got the Roth 401k.
And,
used to have a Roth IRA.
We had the Roth IRA and now the Roth 401k.
That's
sure.
right. That's right. I mean, the thing is that we keep coming up with all these great products. If you can't find a product, a retirement product, that fits you, you're not looking hard enough.
That's right.
There's one out there.
Exactly.
And those things don't exist in most other places, yeah. Joan.
See, I didn't realize that.
And I'm not trying to. This isn't an ugly American routine, folks. I'm not trying to say that that we're good and they're bad. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that you have to put all these things in perspective. We have other things we can do with our money besides putting it in. You know, Joan, where would you rather have your money? Would you rather have your money in a bank drawing 2 or 3%, or would you rather put it pay down on your mortgage?
Well, yeah, that's
beyond a little rainy day money,
right?
You know, where would you rather put it?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or would you put it in the stock market? You can buy incremental stocks through mutual funds and
right.
And so I don't know. It really irritates me. But who keeps beating this drum about America's not saving, Joan?
I don't know.
Thank you, Joan, to Kiplinger for putting it in perspective.
Well, you're welcome.
Because most people don't do that.
That's right.
It's only the only.
And we don't always, but we try.
No, you guys are pretty good about that.
Well, thank you.
Energy, electricity bills, are they?
Yeah. Well, we don't really go into it in this segment, but in the metropolitan area here, there's a lot of problems with electricity bills. We're saying that states are requiring utilities to slow the growth of power use. But the attendant problem here is the utility rates are going up in a lot of areas, including in Maryland. They're actually going to start skyrocketing soon. And that's not good for a small business owner, certainly.
Nope. And you know, Joan, there's an interesting issue with energy bills there too. That I saw this in the 70s. The power companies made all these efforts to get people to conserve energy. Remember that back in the 70s?
Yes.
And I know you were just a baby in those days, but you probably learned about it in your weekly reader or something. But Joan, what happened was Americans responded and we cut our energy usage. But then the utility company said, wait a minute, what have we done? We don't have any revenue.
Right.
People cut
right.
back on their, guess what they did to get the revenue back? They raise rates.
Oh.
So now you're colder because you're saving energy, but you're paying as much to be colder.
I see.
So I'm a little bit skeptical of this energy efficiency thing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think that there is let's remember that these utility companies still have to pay their bills. They've got all these stranded costs out there.
Right.
That they still have to fund. And so, you know, that's something. You know what, folks? We try to balance things out when we talk about them on this show. We really do try hard. Tintel, we're going to be right back with Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us.
Stranger.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're about to wrap up our outstanding little bit of time that we spent with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, you've got a little section here on a popular Small Business Administration loan program that I want to talk about in a second. But before we do, I want to say something that I haven't talked about on the show before. This week, someone my audience has gotten to know over the last 5 years very well. He's been on the show many times. He is my personal friend. I consider him to be a very good friend of mine personally. I also consider him to be a very good friend of small business. I know he is. And he's somebody who's kind of taken it on the chin, and I think in most cases undeserved in the last few months. But Hector Barreto, the administrator of the U.S. Small Business Administration, resigned this week. And Joan, I know the SBA pretty well. I've got contacts in the SBA just about as deep as you can go.
Mm-hmm.
And I have determined that something I think some people might be curious about is, did he resign or was he asked to leave? Because as you know, the president is shaking up his cabinet a little bit.
Right.
But Mr. Barreto actually did resign on his own. And I would like to say this, and I don't think he'd mind me saying this. He and I talked about off the air, just as friends, he and I talked about him leaving, his plans for leaving the SBA. Guess when we started talking about it? Over a year ago.
Well, he's been there since 2001.
Yeah.
I mean, you burn yourself out, you're working in any administration at a high level.
And he just came through Katrina.
Right.
Let me tell you something, folks. I know the toll that Katrina took on him. I know how hard he worked to try to handle that impossible job. Joan, you got to admit that was an impossible job for
tough
anybody,
job.
For whether they did it, whether they were capable or not, and he was capable. But my point is the reason, something I know that a lot of people don't know, is that he and I were having conversations about what are you going to do next over a year ago, a little over a year ago. So this is not something I was surprised about. He was not forced out. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I saw the president standing on the podium telling the audience what a great job Hector was doing. And I don't think he would have gone through all that if there was a chance that he was going to resign in a few days. I'm not saying the president didn't know it. I just know that he has the confidence of the president. And I would like to say one more thing. Hector Barreto is the best friend, has been a best friend of small business. Joan, tell us about this new loan program, or not new loan program, but a program that a lot of people would not know about.
Well, it's a program called the 504 Loan Program, and Congress is going to ease some rules and increase the appropriation. And I think this is good for your listeners to know, because a 504 loan, it's not for financing your business necessarily, but it's to help you acquire land or a building or heavy equipment.
Right.
And the way you get a 504 loan is to go to one of the many, many certified development companies around the country. There's 270 of them, and at least one in every state.
Including banks.
Including
your
yes.
bank. And guess, Joan,
yes.
guess who has been a recipient, a benefactor, a beneficiary, I should say, of the 504 program?
You?
Yep.
Oh, see?
Several years ago.
Yeah.
And guess what? It came at a time when I seriously needed it. And I have said on this show before that, and I've said this to Hector not long ago, if it hadn't been for a 504 program, the 504 program, when I needed it at a strategic time, when I needed it, I didn't need a handout. I needed a little bit of a leg up. If it hadn't been for that 504 program, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
See? Yeah. Made the difference.
Yeah, sure. It made a difference. It sure did. And so anyway, that's a good thing. I'm glad they're expanding that. That's a really good program, Joe.
And this is at a time when, for cost-cutting reasons, some different programs in the SBA are being cut back. But there's no question that this one is not going to be cut back. It's going to be expanded a little bit instead.
It's a really good one. There's no question about that. Joan, we got about 30 seconds. Let's talk a little bit about politics. Are the Democrats going to pick up seats?
Darn, we left this with just 30 seconds. Yes, they're going to pick up governor seats. They're going to pick up seats in Congress.
Are they
will there
take
be a majority?
Majority?
We don't know yet, but they're going to pick up a bunch of seats. And picking
Come on,
up governor
Joan.
Seats.
I can't believe you're not guys that aren't predicting anything
but
here.
But picking up governor seats is important because that's the infrastructure in the state.
You're right.
The political infrastructure led by a Republican or Democrat makes all the difference.
Well, and over the last several years, Republicans have been making, they actually have owned the majority of state houses now, don't they?
And that influences, albeit indirectly, how Congress goes.
There's no question about it. No, there's no question about it. So this may be the bellwether, Joan. We shall see. And I promise you, we'll be talking politics some more this year. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. We won't do without her. We can't. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.